To the north of us is Turnbull Woods, and to the west the Botanic Gardens. The Botanic Gardens were the final development of what had been in an earlier day known as the Skokie Marsh. It had been the principal breeding area for the Glencoe mosquitoes, which made screen porches mandatory. There was no cooking out or eating on the patio in those days. It was this situation which led to the creation of the North Shore Mosquito Abatement District. The marsh, also because of its swampy nature, had peat bogs in places. In the fall, as they dried out, they would catch fire spontaneously and burn for a period of time before being extinguished. The loss of the peat was not particularly unfortunate, but the smoke indeed was. It was in the 1930s, under a government make-work project, that the CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps, sought to put an end to these pestiferous problems by excavating and regrading the marsh into a system of lagoons. In the process, they expected to create a recreation area as a byproduct. Can you imagine such an anti-wetland suggestion being made today, let alone carried out? Yet none who lives nearby has ever suggested it wasn't a wise and welcome decision. Before we leave the Glencoe Golf Club and turn east on Wesley Road, let us hesitate just at the turn. Here we have the 18th Green, approached from the south by what was at the time a 585-yard-long fairway. In the mid-1930s, to commemorate the 10th anniversary of airmail, it was arranged that a biplane should land on this fairway and collect pouches of airmail from the Glencoe Post Office to be delivered elsewhere with the commemorative cancellation of the event. Many of the residents and all of the small boys of the village gathered for the event. A great cheer went up as that biplane arose from the fairway, carrying Glencoe's first and last on-site airmail operation. Now, as we proceed in an easterly direction on Wesley Road, we're once again reminded that Glencoe lies on high ground. The highest ground is the right-of-way of the Northwestern Railway. We recall that this is the Highland Park Moraine created by the glacier which passed through here, stopping just beyond in Winnetka. This creates a watershed to the west as well as to the east, observed earlier. As we go up the hill to Hofelder Road, where we will turn right, we must remind ourselves that this area was farmland worked by people of predominantly German extraction. Indeed, the Hofelder name is of such German origin. They were dairy farmers in the early days of Glencoe and did house-to-house delivery of milk. Yet it was not unusual for residents of Glencoe to keep a cow or two of their own in their barns in the pre-1900 days. We turn south on Hofelder Road and proceed to Sunset Road, where we will turn off to the east a block before Dundee Road. Sunset Road runs east as far as Vernon Avenue. As soon as we turn left on Sunset, let's cross the first street, Oak Ridge Drive, and pause. We are now in Skokie Ridge, one of Glencoe's two major subdivisions of the 1920s. In those days, the developer, in this case Baird & Warner, a name persisting to this day, would lay out the subdivision and then put in all the infrastructure. Water lines, sewers, street lights, paved roads, and in some cases even sidewalks. Then they would seek to sell the lots to individuals who would contract with whomever they chose to build their houses. However many lots may have sold, only about 20% were built upon prior to the onset of the Depression in the early 1930s. Because of the Depression of the 30s, followed by the building material shortage during and following World War II, these subdivisions remained largely unchanged and underbuilt over more than two decades. Then in the early 1950s, along comes a woman developer, Greta Lederer, who began to build houses on the vacant property with her own contractor, and then she would sell them. Once your eye picks up on it, it is easy to tell which are the houses of the timbered Norman style of those built during the 20s, and the Greta Lederer houses built in the 50s and 60s, which tend to resemble themselves to a considerable extent. Greta Lederer was also the principal developer of Strawberry Hill, lying south and principally west of West School. That area was not laid out at all until after World War II. It has been suggested that whoever named that ex-Skokie marshland Strawberry Hill was likely the same person who named Greenland. The pavements which you see here were about Glencoe's only concrete and curbed roadways at the time. This, coupled with its sparsely built-up nature, these roads were the training ground for many of Glencoe's teenagers learning to drive the dreaded stick shift of those days. Alas, there was no driver's education class at New Trier. This subdivision extends from Dundee Road to Green Bay Road with three north-south streets, Oak Ridge, Skokie Ridge, and Elm Ridge. And yes, it was originally German farmland. As we proceed east on Sunset past Elm Ridge Drive, we stop mid-block. Here we are exiting Skokie Ridge Subdivision and immediately entering Skokie Heights Subdivision. The latter was the child of a real estate company named McGuire & Orr. Their office in the 20s and early 30s was a small frame building about the size of a two-car garage standing right on Park Avenue where the library now stands. Skokie Heights followed the same kind of a pattern as Skokie Ridge just discussed. It is a somewhat smaller subdivision with only two north-south streets, Bluff Road and Eastwood Road. While there is a physical outlet from the junction of these two streets onto Green Bay Road, that outlet has remained gated closed for over 60 years. We turn right on Bluff Road and proceed to Dundee Road, where we stop before crossing. It's curious to note that south of Dundee Road, Bluff Road retreats to the more prosaic name of Bluff Street. Before crossing, however, we must look well at the stone gates and planters at the entrance to this subdivision. Skokie Ridge has similar ones at its entrance to the west, and each is replicated at their Green Bay Road entrances. Fancy entrances to developments is one aspect which has not changed since the 1920s. In their day, each real estate company hung its own decorative sign beneath the sign proclaiming the subdivision name. Now let's cross Dundee Road and then pause on Bluff Street. Here we look south ahead of us to realize that Bluff Street undulates considerably, likely much more than we had been aware of previously. What we have to think about again is that the railroad tracks are the high ground, and glacial and rainwater runoff went west, as well as into Lake Michigan on the east side. While the ravines on the east side are very pronounced, those on the west are more subtle, in many places being merely depressions. But here on Bluff Street they occur at the rate of one per block. The first is visible just ahead of us, midway between Dundee and Milton Road. While these were open streams in the early days, all flowage is now contained in buried storm sewers, with one soon-to-be-seen exception. Please proceed to Milton, and then pause and look right down the hill. In the 30s, this street would be barricaded closed to traffic in the winter to allow for sleds and toboggans to run down its snowy face. In the non-snow period the rest of the year, roller skates and coaster wagons were used to attempt transit down both Milton and Lincoln Hill. The sidewalks were preferable, and between Bluff and Valley Road. Remember, there was no television as a distraction then. It was, where did you go? Out. What did you do? Nothing. But we sure did a lot of that. At the corner of Lincoln, we cross and pause immediately. For here is the second of our subtle ravines, cutting across from the northeast corner to the southwest. The house on the southeast corner shows a depressed front yard. On the west side of Bluff, the mark of the ravine is unmistakable. Thus is the west side of Glencoe ribbed with these runoff depressions. Now we proceed south until at the lowest point before Park Avenue. Here on our right we see the last open stream bed, just beyond the sidewalk at the point where the storm sewer inlet is set into it. Bluff Street deserves its name as the ground falls off the greatest amount between it and Valley Road to the west, and thus Valley Road also deserves its name. We'll turn left and go east on Park Avenue for a block. As we do, note the modest group of frame houses on the south side. These are typical of some of the simpler dwelling built on the west side around the turn of the century. As we turn right onto southbound Grove Street, pause and take note of the open soccer and baseball area of playground. In the 1930s and 40s, Glencoe was in the process of developing what was called the school park concept. This consisted of siting park property adjacent to school property so that it could do double duty as playground for the school at recess and after-school sports activity. In the early 1960s, it was decided to move the artificial ice rink, then at Dennis Lane and Old Green Bay Road, to the corner of Park and Greenwood, adjacent to Central School. The school property had been inching northward meanwhile. With the building of the new school in 1939, Hazel Avenue was vacated as a street and became an extension of the school grounds. At the same time, three houses on the north side of Hazel were bought, torn down, and the school grounds further extended. With the ice rink decision, the balance of the houses in the block were purchased by the school and park boards, and the land cleared. The brick building on Greenwood Avenue, just north of Hazel on the west side, was constructed as the warming house for the ice rink, and for such other out-of-season uses as the school and park districts might find. It was named in honor of Fred Holmes, who functioned as park district treasurer into his 98th year. He died shortly before his 100th birthday, but happily, just following the dedication. Vogue's Pass and the artificial ice rink has passed with them. Now let's proceed south until we're opposite the auditorium and stop. Here we reflect on its history. It was built in 1928 as a result of public subscription. No tax dollars were used. On completion, it was donated to the school district. It now bears the name of former superintendent of schools, Charles Young, having been renamed from bearing the name of former superintendent of schools, Paul Meisner. Its construction predates his long span of years in the community subsequently. The man who spearheaded the fundraising and construction was Clarence McNeil. A plaque commemorating the undertaking is in the foyer of the auditorium. State of the art at the time of its building, it remained second only to the auditorium at New Trier as to size and theatrical capabilities. Indeed, when Gaffney Auditorium was closed for a year following a fire, New Trier used this auditorium as the venue for all its large-scale productions. On the second floor above the foyer is a large room generally known as the community room. True to its name, it has a history of hosting a variety of community activities, running the gamut from dancing school classes to caucus nominating committee deliberations. Central School, as it stands today, opened in 1939, having been built around Old Central School, which was originally constructed in 1899. An old central school functioned all during the new school's construction. It stood to the northwest of the existing school in the playground area by the tall brick smokestack. While the old school was adjudged too old at 40 years of age, its successor building has just turned a healthy 55 in this year of the village's 125th celebration. Now we proceed south on Grove Street, crossing Washington Avenue, and immediately pulling over on the right. We are now at Glencoe's third golf course on the tour, Skokie Country Club, built as a Gentile and largely WASP club. Chartered in 1897, it was named for the Skokie Marsh, on which the lower portions were built. The village, which is now called Skokie, was then known as Niles Center, and only changed its name following World War II. A part of the property had been the Gormley Farm. Glencoe's three golf courses amount to about 18% of the total area of the village. Forest Preserve land accounts for another 12%, and the Park District land for another 4%. Thus, through these three agencies, Glencoe is one-third open space, with Lake Michigan thrown in for a big bonus. We are indeed unique and fortunate. Now let's consider south to just before Madison Avenue. Here on the east side, we notice the last two houses north of Madison. Both of these were originally built as summer homes for early club members. Since converted to year-round dwellings, they remind us that at the turn of the century, Glencoe also served as a summer resort in part, especially for the members of the recently built country clubs. The existence of property suitable for golf courses on the west side of town was a reflection of the then undesirability of low-lying property adjacent to the Skokie Marsh. Between mosquitoes, marsh gas, and the usual autumn peat bog fires and attendant smoke, the west side of town below Bluff Street was largely given over to farming until the turn of the century. Now we turn left onto Madison and proceed to Vernon Avenue. We stop at the stop sign here and pause and look both ways, not for cars, but to see the parks. Curious, isn't it, that this strip of parks runs uninterrupted for some four blocks on either side of Vernon Avenue? Well, there's some Glencoe history here. While zoning was first considered in 1919, it wasn't codified until 1929. In the meantime, the park district performed certain zoning functions through its ability to condemn property for park purposes. In the late teens and twenties, the village fathers adjudged much of the Vernon Avenue strip hereabouts to be blighted. Being a poorer area of the village, many of the dwellings were ramshackle and in poor appearance. Two, a number were seeing service as blind pigs, the then term for speakeasies in that Prohibition era. So too were some also reputed to be houses of ill fame. Over a period of years, park district condemnation took place until the strip parks resulted. A few other such areas of pocket parks, such as along South Green Bay Road and around South School, are also manifestations of this long-ago discarded practice. Now we cross Vernon Avenue and proceed east across Randolph Street and then pause. Earlier in the tour, we pointed out some of the twin houses built in the village in earlier times. In this block east of Randolph, we find a pocket of multiple renderings of houses from the same or similar plans. This is the only other area of the village beside Strawberry Hill where this is found. As we reach Lake Avenue, also known as Linden, we see South School and pause. Built in 1926, South School was reflecting the increase in Glencoe population. As the population increased, so did crowding at Central School. Following the opening of South School in 1926, North School was built and opened 2 years later in 1928. These two additional schools allowed students in kindergarten through fifth grade to walk or bike to school in their neighborhoods, easily returning to their homes for lunch. None of the schools had lunch programs prior to World War II. All students went to Central School for sixth through eighth grade in those days. They also had their kindergarten through fifth grade at Central School, if that was indeed the school of their neighborhood. Now let's go north on Green Bay Road to Washington Avenue, where we turn west to the first bend in the road. Here we find the recently built St. Paul AME Church, replacing an earlier structure. This congregation was organized in 1884 to serve the black population which then existed in Glencoe. The predecessor building was constructed in 1931, replacing a frame structure destroyed by fire the year previously. Now we need to turn around and go back north on Green Bay Road, ultimately winding up back at the railroad station. This road as we see it was constructed in the early 1930s as a PWA project of early Roosevelt days. The PWA stood for Public Works Administration, which functioned as a make-work agency in the emerge-from-the-depression era of the mid-30s. Prior to that time, this was a two-lane street called Railroad Avenue, which terminated northbound at Temple Court, to be restarted north of Park Avenue. There was no bridge over Hazel, save for the two railroads. We have spoken of this earlier. Oft-times, as a village evolves around us while we are living in it, we are not conscious of the significance of what is taking place. The changes seem in the main to be quite subtle. But looking back over the 125 years since the village was incorporated, we can see that there was a considerable amount of thought and planning and doing which went into the shaping and operation of Glencoe. Such thought and care and planning go on to this day. Those who look back on current activities at a future date will be both conscious of it and grateful for it. We are not expected to be perfect, but we are expected to do our best as we see it at the time. Over the past 125 years, the citizens of Glencoe have surely tried to do their best in their time. The village stands today as testimony that this is so, and we are the beneficiaries. Thank you for joining us today for this trip into some lesser-known aspects of Glencoe. It is truly a village well worth caring about.